7:35 in the morning, Monday, the 26th of April. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be having our breakfast grill. Philip, what's happening then?
Yep. So Chuang speaks to Tiong Teck Lien, Group CEO of GDEX Berhad, who was on the grill last year outlining his concerns for COVID-19 and the business. Now, they catch up on developments within GDEX since then and what lies ahead for one of the biggest names in express delivery here. But before that, how does 5G technology affect some of the issues of previous network generations? Do we need new infrastructure? Join us on Tech Talk, the tech of tomorrow, presented by OPPO. In episode 4, we'll be hearing from Henry Tang, OPPO's chief 5G scientist, and Sylvan Seo, VP of Efficient IP, where we talk about improving 5G and device performance. Friday, the 30th of April, only on BFM 89.9. Brought to you by OPPO, technology for mankind, kindness for the world.
Now, over the weekend, ASEAN convened a special summit in Jakarta to discuss the situation in Myanmar. The ASEAN leaders' meeting was the first time that ASEAN leaders met with the leader of the Burmese military junta, Senior General Aung Myint Lan, since the February coup. One of the key outcomes of the summit was the decision to appoint an ASEAN special envoy to mediate between all parties. The move to appoint a special envoy is unusual for ASEAN, which traditionally has avoided direct intervention into domestic political disputes. So, for some analysis on the implications of this summit, we speak to Sebastio Strangio, Southeast Asia editor at the online portal The Diplomat. Now, our Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin was reported saying that ASEAN leaders' meeting succeeded in addressing the Myanmar crisis. Would you agree that the outcome was a success? And how significant is the 5-point consensus that was achieved?
Oh, thanks for having me. I think a lot of it depends on what your definition for success is. I mean, clearly, by the standards of the ASEAN statements that had come previously, the 5-point consensus was, you know, a considerable improvement. And the, you know, the appointment of a special envoy, as you know, is something that's quite unique. And you know, it shows, I think, ASEAN's awareness that the world is watching how it responds to this crisis and how it manages, you know, the potential, you know, implosion of one of its member states. But, you know, there are many, many obstacles that remain in the way of a diplomatic solution to the problem in Myanmar, not least the fact that the two main competing factions, the military junta and the national unity government and its allies, you know, neither of them have at the moment much incentive to compromise. The National Unity Government does not want to, you know, it views compromise as capitulation, while Min Aung Hlaing and his junta feel that they hold the whip hand, given that they control the armed forces. And so, you know, at the moment, it's hard to see a clear way forward. But, you know, this 5-point consensus, of course, is better than nothing.
But is there something to be read from the decision of Thailand to send the Deputy Prime Minister and the Philippines to send their Foreign Affairs Secretary instead of the heads of government to attend?
Well, certainly there's, you know, a lot of people have, you know, have read into the decision by Prime Minister Prayut to remain in Thailand and not to attend the meeting. You know, people have pointed out that the Tatmadaw and the Royal Thai Army have close relations. There are close relationships between, you know, leading members of the two militaries, you know, interpersonal relationships. And shortly after his coup at the start of February, Min Aung Hlaing wrote personally to General Prime Minister Prayut to, you know, to ask for his support in, quote, building, you know, Myanmar's democracy. Of course, Prayut himself came to power in a coup in 2014. And so he, you know, it's reasonable to assume that he wants to avoid confronting his Burmese counterpart directly. In the case of Duterte, there's talk that, you know, he's potentially unwell, and that, you know, he's also argued that the COVID situation has required him to remain behind. But I do think that, you know, ASEAN's inability to muster all 10 heads of government to be at this meeting, you know, is important symbolically, you know, as a reflection of the very different views that its, you know, its member states have about the crisis in Myanmar and its urgency.
But Sebastian, does the ASEAN leaders' meeting actually have a bearing on the legitimacy of the Myanmar military government, especially since the National Unity government was not invited to attend?
Well, it's certainly being read that way. I think ASEAN has been in a difficult situation in some ways. I mean, it's you know, preferred course of action is to open up, is to end the violence in Myanmar and to open up a way to dialogue between the competing factions. Unfortunately, you know, the military is responsible for much of the violence that's taken place in Myanmar over the last few months, and so speaking with the military, engaging with the military directly is sort of unavoidable if you want to open the way to, you know, negotiated settlement or talks of some kind. But of course, you know, the opponents of the military junta, you know, are accusing ASEAN of lending it legitimacy by welcoming it to the meeting like this. But I think that it's in some ways unavoidable for ASEAN to speak with the junta if it wishes to open the way to, you know, negotiations. If the National Unity Government had been invited to the summit, it's very possible that that Min Aung Hlaing would have refused to attend. And so it's a very delicate and complex issue. As I said before, neither of the two sides recognizes legitimacy of the other. And getting things to a point where the two sides are willing to sit down and even speak to each other, is even that alone is a huge challenge.
But actions must lead to consequences. Now, there was a unanimous call for a cessation of violence in Myanmar. But what happens if armed clashes continue? What are the consequences then?
Well, and this will really test ASEAN, because, you know, imposing punishments and costs on its member states is something that ASEAN is congenitally, you know, resistant to. Its origins as a post-colonial grouping, that was all about sort of reconciling the sovereignties of the nations that were its members, and it takes a very statist view of how international relations should operate. And so I think that, you know, I don't see ASEAN imposing any, you know, any sanctions of any kind on Myanmar. I think that most ASEAN states would probably recognize that to be counterproductive. But if the violence continues, it's going to, a lot of questions will be raised about whether ASEAN's approach to this has been the right one.
And Sebastian, earlier on we referenced the ASEAN Special Envoy, but realistically, what levers does he have or she have to mediate or diffuse the situation?
Well, ASEAN will be hoping that the military junta views whoever they appoint as a special envoy as a non-threatening figure that they're willing to engage with. The hope, of course, is that further down the line, the National Unity Government also views this envoy in that way. And that, you know, rather than taking the very punitive approach of a lot of Western governments, the fact that ASEAN member states are members of the Southeast Asian region, they are neighbors, there's a certain degree of trust there that might be lacking in the case of Western countries, that is the leverage, that there is, you know, they are able to sort of open a door to get a hearing in the halls of Naypyidaw, and also to get a hearing with the National Unity Government, and to bring both sides at some stage together. But as I said, it's going to require very deft diplomacy to convince the two sides in Myanmar that compromise is in their best option. At the moment, as I said, neither side has much reason to want to give any ground. In the case of the National Unity Government, rightfully so. They enjoy the legitimacy of the Myanmar, the support of the Myanmar people, and that, you know, they represent a government that was elected in a landslide in November. Trying to convince them to come to some sort of political pact with the military that seized power and has killed more than 700 people in the week since is going to be very difficult. But, you know, unfortunately, it seems like probably the most likely way forward.
So Myanmar remains a member of ASEAN. So will they have a say in the selection of the special envoy?
It's possible that this will be a, you know, like everything else that ASEAN does, it will be a consensus decision. And so, yes, the Myanmar leadership will be able to exercise a veto over the choice of this envoy. I think that they would probably, you know, want someone that they trust, that they know. I would predict that they would be open to the idea, at least, on the surface, you know, whether they cooperate with the envoy and move things, you know, de-escalate the situation and move things toward a more stable situation, of course, very much remains to be seen. But I would be surprised if ASEAN would appoint an envoy without the consent of the Myanmar military junta.
And very quickly, Sebastian, you know, there have been calls for ASEAN to suspend Myanmar's membership in the group. Is that too remote a possibility?
It seems fairly remote at the moment. There's no formal mechanism by which ASEAN can expel a member. It doesn't have there's nothing in its charter that refers to the expulsion of members, and I think there's always been an assumption that, you know, why would you want to leave? You know, it's, and also, you know, I think that there would be an argument from ASEAN's defenders that suspending membership or kicking a nation out of ASEAN is not the ASEAN way. That would not help to solve a lot of the problems, you know, that the region and specific nations within it face. And I think that, you know, for that to happen, there'd have to be amendments to the charter, which of course is something that some ASEAN member states have spoken about for some time. But I think this crisis has sort of, it's exposed, you know, some of the limits of ASEAN's current structure and operating procedures. You know, limits that have a very reasonable origin in many cases, but that are, you know, slowing down its response to this crisis. And so the question is, once this crisis passes, or if this crisis passes soon, you know, how ASEAN, you know, goes about potentially rejigging its charter and changing the way it does things in anticipation of future crises.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Sebastian Strangio, Southeast Asia editor with The Diplomat, basically saying that it's pretty much deadlocked for the moment, except the appointment of a special ASEAN envoy is perhaps a little bit of a positive move. But whether it has any muscle or teeth is, of course, the big question mark.
And if they cannot exercise that muscle, it will just show that ASEAN is truly ineffective. That is one of the biggest risks you do. You put yourself out there, you make these commitments, and then they don't deliver on the commitments, lagi teruk.
Well, we'll be watching this space closely. But up next, Malaysia's debt issuance with Firdaus Rosli of the Malaysian Rating Corporation. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.